Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, September 8th, 2022. Judd Architecture Office damaged in fire to reopen spring 2024. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Allegra Hobbs, ALLEGRA at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa, the Judd Foundation recently announced Donald Judd's architecture office, a historic downtown Marfa building, which suffered extensive damage due to a fire in 2021, just as its initial renovation was nearly completed, will be reconstructed with an opening date of spring 2024. The Highland Avenue building, which the late artist Donald Judd had used as his architecture office, caught fire in June of last year, leading to what Marfa Fire Chief Gary Mitschke called a total loss for the most part. The roof had gone up in flames and the center of the second floor caved into the first floor. In the ensuing months, the foundation oversaw a multi-phase remediation process to repair the fire damage so that the interrupted restoration work could resume. Because it had already undergone the beginnings of the restoration project at the time of the fire, the brick structure remained largely intact. It is currently braced with steel buttresses, a temporary measure to reinforce the facade. Architecture firm Shom Shai was on site for much of the remediation process to help ensure that the existing structure was salvaged as much as possible. Now, over a year since the fire, the foundation is looking forward to getting the long-awaited restoration back underway. As far as morale, just getting this project back underway is going to be the biggest boost there to actually see progress again on the building, said Peter Stanley, the foundation's director of operations and preservation. But getting that process back up and running is a serious undertaking following such extensive damage. Much of the second floor has been wiped out, noted Stanley. But the team will attempt to use the original elements within the structure as much as possible. We're confident we can save a lot of doors and some windows, said Stanley. Unfortunately, a lot of the other materials, like the tin ceilings, those show damage pretty quickly. Some of the wood floors may be salvageable, but even those that survived will carry a lingering burnt smell. What sparked the blaze will remain a mystery, per Stanley. Following an investigation led by the Hanover Insurance Group, the foundation's insurance company, and the contractor, the cause of the fire was undetermined. Once reopened, the building will be accessible to the public, meaning visitors will have access to Judd's office, which contains architectural models, building plans, design prototypes, and his furniture. The restoration of the building, said Stanley, means a significant piece of historic downtown Marfa will survive. This building, sitting right there on Highland Avenue, two blocks from the courthouse, is part of this historic fabric of downtown Marfa that is amazingly intact, he said. You've seen a lot of towns where, for one reason or another, their fabric was reworked, demolished. And it was really through Judd's practice of acquiring these buildings, of holding onto them and doing his own kind of historic restoration, that we still have all these buildings and this bit of history is still very legible in Marfa. Staff photo by Maisie Crow. Marfa Shorthand's mascot, Bullette, rides in the parade down Highland Avenue as part of the 35th Annual Marfa Lights Festival. Mayor Baeza introduces 2022-23 Marfa City Budget. City Council workshops begin this week. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. At a special City Council meeting last week, Mayor Manny Baeza introduced the proposed 2022-23 Marfa City Budget, and council members voted to accept a new proposed tax rate. All council members were present. The city will host budget workshops throughout the month of September to further discuss the proposed budget. The meeting schedule, along with a draft of the city budget, is available online on the city's website. First, council heard from Dan Dunlap, contract accountant for the city, on setting the new tax rate. The city's current property tax rate is $0.363 per $100 taxable value, and the new rate, which council voted to accept but is pending final approval after a public hearing, will be $0.371, a 2.35% increase from the previous year. The public hearing on the proposed tax rate will be held at 6 p.m. Tuesday, September 20th. Next, Mayor Baeza presented a rough draft of the 2022-23 fiscal year budget, and council members went through department by department to go over the basics and familiarize themselves with the new proposal. The bare-bones nature of the budget was emphasized by Baeza and City Manager Mandy Roan, who said it didn't reflect a cost-of-living adjustment for city employees or potential new rates that result from the city's water and wastewater study, which she is expecting to be completed by the end of month. Baeza also clarified that the budget did not include potential grant monies because the money was not yet in hand. The budget presented was slim, with some utilities departments, including water and natural gas, which are designed to be revenue-generating sources for the city, losing money. You're looking at a negative revenue of $41,000 for one of your enterprise funds, said Baeza of the natural gas department. This is where you should be making money to provide services for the city. Council again addressed a matter previously discussed in early August, the anticipation of citizens' natural gas utility bills rising, potentially even doubling, as a result of the hike in natural gas prices. At the time, Roan said the city would be unable to absorb the difference in price due to such high increases from the market. Baeza put it plainly, explaining that most city departments lose money. Your library loses money. Your admin loses money. EMS loses money. Law enforcement loses money. A lot of the services we provide are not profitable, he said. You have to focus on your revenues. You have to focus on the water and sewer, natural gas, your enterprise funds, so that way we can offset the services provided to the city of Marfa. The city, which has not raised water and wastewater rates since 2015, will likely decide to do so, but has yet to discuss specifics as council members and city administrators await the completion of the water and wastewater study. In addition to allocating funds for maintenance to City Hall, council discussed Marfa Police Department's facilities, stating there was $32,000 allocated for the renovation of their space in order to increase security and privacy for citizens. The city recently submitted an Operation Lone Star grant for $40,000 for overtime for Marfa PD officers and $80,000 to pay the remaining cost of police vehicles, which were funded in part by the city's first grant from Governor Greg Abbott's Border Security Program. The city budgeted that Marfa ISD would reimburse a $40,000 salary for a school resource officer who would work on school grounds but be a city employee under the umbrella of the Marfa PD. The Marfa Volunteer Fire Department's budget, which was recently awarded over $200,000 from the American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA, in order to expand its facilities, was likely to change, said Baeza, and did not reflect those forthcoming grant funds. Other city-run entities like the Marfa Public Library were facing some fiscal challenges. Due to the dissolution of the Lannan Foundation, who has long provided $10,000 a year to the library to expand its book collection, library leaders were looking elsewhere for funds, including to the Hancher Library Foundation. The Marfa Activities Center could potentially see some money allocated to fix bathrooms, as well as to resurface and repaint the pool. Council also reviewed funding to continue street repairs. Baeza said tax note funds would likely help funnel $1.5 million into the repair of Mesa and Russell Streets, plus more projects were being considered. The city would also explore applying for another community development block grant from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, which it last received funds from in 2018. Notably, council members also touched on the idea of utilizing hotel occupancy tax, HOT, revenue more creatively for projects which could benefit the local community, a topic previously discussed at local meetings with the Texas Hotel Lodging Association. Currently, laws surrounding the use of HOT funds primarily allow for the money to be funneled back into tourism activities. So far, the city has budgeted similar HOT revenue from the past of $754,650. Council member Jason Bowman suggested partnering with other cities to lobby Congress on the issue in the coming legislative session. City Council met again Wednesday evening at a budget workshop after press time. They will also meet on Thursday, September 8th at 6 p.m. at City Hall. The Big Bend Sentinel will have an update in next week's issue. Effort to conserve state's mountain lion populations, formation of stakeholder group underway. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Austin. Texans for Mountain Lions, a coalition of landowners, hunters, biologists, and more, which filed a petition to Texas Parks and Wildlife, TPWD, in June, advocating for better management of the state's mountain lion populations, is continuing to move forward with the cooperation of the state agency regarding the formation of a stakeholder group and further studies into the status of big cat populations. Texas, unlike other states with viable mountain lion populations, does not currently implement hunting regulations such as seasons, harvest limits, or harvest reporting. The petition, which was ultimately denied by TPWD, requested harvest reporting, 36-hour trap check times, the prohibition of canned hunting, and immediate enforcement of harvest limits in South Texas, where lion populations are known to be dwindling to dangerously low numbers. While the rules the coalition put forth were not adopted by TPWD, two elements of its petition, the formation of a stakeholder group and need to conduct further research, were met favorably by TPWD commissioners, who agreed in a commission meeting in late August to make swift progress on the initiatives. Romy Swanson, private land ecologist affiliated with the Hershey Ranch in Gillespie County and member of Texans for Mountain Lions, said the petition was in part successful because it helped initiate public conversation and awareness of the lack of mountain lion management in the state. Texans for Mountain Lions received around 1,700 letters of support from the public in support of their mountain lion management petition, said Swanson. We're not necessarily discouraged with the results of the denial of the petition. We're seeing a lot of positive signals, said Swanson. It's just making sure that those positive signals result in accountability, timeliness, and transparency throughout the process. While TPWD has yet to take any formal steps to fund research on the topic, Swanson said the agency didn't seem opposed to doing so once input from the advisory committee as to the scope of data has been discussed. The formation of the committee is ongoing, but will likely include a number of stakeholders representing different facets of mountain lion management, said Swanson. I think that wisely, you're going to see the group represented mostly by those folks who live closest to and among mountain lions, including ranchers, farmers, landowners within mountain lion country in South Texas and West Texas, biologists, conservationists, hunters, said Swanson. Data on mountain lion populations in the state of Texas, while not extensive, does exist. A scientific paper titled "It's Time to Manage Mountain Lions in Texas," released in conjunction with the petition, outlines the results of studies that have monitored mountain lion populations in the past, one conducted in the 90s by TPWD in South and West Texas, and details routine efforts to learn more about mountain lion populations dating back decades. Swanson said the narrative that some pushed, that there was a complete lack of information in order to make management decisions, was simply not true. We would recommend that there does exist a small, but mounting, growing amount of data that could be interpreted by reasonable people to suggest that there are reasons to be concerned about the longevity of the South Texas population in particular, and problems with the West Texas population potentially, said Swanson. Swanson said further research on Texas mountain lions should start with an effort to establish trends and over time rely on consistency and a systematic approach as opposed to anecdotal evidence. But gaining information on elusive creatures with large roaming areas won't be without its challenges. We need a systematic approach to monitoring mountain lions that is consistent and consecutive, said Swanson, so that we have a pulse on what the population is doing in as real time as possible. TPWD does collect data on mountain lion harvest, if voluntarily shared, but Swanson said decades of helpful data has been lost as a result of that policy, and Texans for Mountain Lions are advocating for codification of basic regulations, including harvest reporting. In addition to recreational hunting, mountain lions may be trapped and killed for the protection of livestock. I don't think anybody in the group is intending for this to be an overreach. We just want to provide a backstop for understanding and for management, said Swanson. None of those things require removing tools that landowners need to be able to be viable in the operation of their ranches. But some have already come out in opposition to formal mountain lion hunting regulations. Wildlife filmmaker Ben Masters, who showed public support for Texans for Mountain Lions goals, posted online in August on his Instagram page that he and his family were being harassed by a prominent individual in Texas hunting media as a result of his position on the matter of mountain lion management. Swanson said the pushback seemed to stem from the fact that Texas is primarily a private land state and knee-jerk reactions tend to go against any forms of regulation. But, he said, the coalition will continue to help individuals understand their goals, which the group says promote ethics, not take away mountain lion hunting. For example, the issue of 36-hour trap check times could involve implementing technology like sensors that would help alert landowners without them having to make routine checks if traps are hard to reach. The more conversations that I have, the more trust that I earn from some stakeholders that are otherwise against this. I hear more and more, "Well, that doesn't seem so bad," or, "We might be able to work with that," said Swanson. There's ways to work through this that does not put out the landowner, the land manager, that also accomplishes the objective of ethical practices, monitoring, and consistent management. Successful partnerships with private landowners in terms of scientific studies and mountain lion habitat will be paramount moving forward, said Swanson, who underscored Texans for Mountain Lion's mission to ensure the animals continue to populate Texas landscapes for generations to come. Ultimately, the most important thing for the success of mountain lions continuing in the state of Texas is to have those landowners that manage large open spaces to remain viable and not feel the need to sell their properties and potentially break them up into smaller and smaller parcels with mixed management, said Swanson. New COVID boosters that protect against Omicron subvariants available in Alpine. By Allegra Hobbs, Allegra at BigBendSentinel.com. Alpine. This week, a new round of COVID booster shots that strengthen immunity against the now dominant Omicron subvariants of the virus will be available at Alpine pharmacies. The bivalent formula has been approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for use as a single-shot booster to be administered at least 2 months following a patient's most recent vaccine dose. The Moderna vaccine is authorized for individuals 18 and older. The Pfizer vaccine is authorized for those 12 and older. The Moderna shot will be available at Highland Drug in Alpine on Thursday, September 8th, during the pharmacy's regular hours of 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. The Pfizer shot will be available the next day, on Friday, during the same hours. Appointments are not necessary. The pharmacy will take walk-ins. Highland Drug is located at 504 East Avenue East. At Prescription Shop, located at 909 East Holland Avenue, the Moderna shot will be available on Friday during the shop's regular hours, 8:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Anyone hoping to get a shot is advised to make an appointment in advance. They are limited in number per head pharmacist Meredith Schock and may go fast. The pharmacy had ordered 300 shots. As of Tuesday, there were around 250 remaining and folks were booking appointments. I'm going to try to keep giving them every Friday, but it's going to depend on the availability, said Schock. She noted that she'd ordered more vaccines, but it was unclear how soon they would arrive. 300 doses was the maximum amount available for pre-order. The new boosters are not yet available at the Marfa Country Clinic, said Dr. Christy Alexander. A representative for Preventative Care Health Services could not immediately be reached. Beto rallies in Alpine as Brewster County Democrats get out the vote. By Allegra Hobbs, Allegra at BigBendSentinel.com. Alpine. On Sunday afternoon, Beto O'Rourke stood before a crowd of over 600 inside Alpine's Granada Theater and told enthusiastic attendees that he would be the next governor of Texas. The victory was assured, he said, by a platform that included the championing of reproductive rights and the reformation of permissive gun laws. But beyond policy proposals, O'Rourke came armed with the message of unity, collegiality, and the seeking of common ground that cynical actors had worked to upset. In their Texas, it is you or it is me. In our Texas, it's going to be you and me, all of us together, working for, by, and with one another, said O'Rourke. Then there was the matter of his opponent, the Republican incumbent, whose record has been lambasted by the Democratic hopeful throughout his campaign. We're going to win because we are running against arguably the worst governor in the United States of America, Greg Abbott. Brewster County went for Abbott in the 2018 gubernatorial election, but by a slim margin, fewer than 3 percentage points, gave him an edge over his Democratic opponent. Statewide and national races tend to be that close in the purple county, where local offices are often held by Democrats. In any case, in a statewide election, whether or not O'Rourke takes the county is beside the point. Local Democrats are more concerned with adding to the overall number of ballots cast statewide for their candidate. Mary Bell Lockhart, chair of the Brewster County chapter of the Texas Democratic Party, was present at Sunday's rally and left hopeful about their chances this November. She maintains that the voters are there, it's just a matter of spurring them into action. Brewster County has more Democrats than Republicans in it, but not as many of ours are faithful voters, so that's what we want to change this go-around, she explained. Lockhart also estimated that the political landscape in the region had changed dramatically across the summer, in large part due to the Republican Party's extreme stance on abortion. Not only is abortion banned in the state, even in cases of rape or incest, a position the majority of Texans do not hold, polling shows, due to a trigger law that took effect after the fall of Roe v. Wade, it is now a felony to perform an abortion in the state. O'Rourke came ready to capitalize on the unpopularity of the policy. Right out of the gate, he pledged to fight for every woman to make her own decisions about her own body, her own future, and her own health care. It was among several promises he made to the people of Brewster County. Noting that the average public school educator in the county is paid $17,500 less than the national average, he promised to help close that gap. When we win this, and when I'm your governor, we're paying every teacher in Brewster County enough to just work one job, he said. He also pledged to do away with the state's STAR test, a standardized test he said teachers had informed him was ill-equipped to evaluate a student's potential. He also promised to set up a registry connecting veterans with the health care they need and spoke of his intention to ensure no veteran goes unhoused. Marijuana will be legalized under his purview, he said, and the records of those arrested for its possession will be expunged. He pledged to weatherize and winterize the grid to prevent the catastrophic blackout of 2021 from recurring, and further pledged to connect ERCOT to the national grid for access to its electricity in a pinch. Finally, he said that he intends to take the gas companies that profited off the blackout to court and return the $11 billion they reaped to the people of Texas. Where the candidate shone, said Lockhart, was in his attention to the matter of rural health care, or lack thereof. O'Rourke acknowledged the dearth of options in the remote Big Bend region and said he planned to expand Medicaid to the tune of $10 billion and would work to revive Grow Your Own programs to bring more health care providers back into the communities they hail from. Our biggest problem, our most urgent problem here is health care, said Lockhart. I think that's our most urgent problem, and Beto obviously gets it. On the matter of gun control, O'Rourke stopped short of calling for a ban on assault weapons, as he has in the past. He decried the permitless carry law Abbott signed off on last year and called for finding some common ground to get back to the responsible tradition of gun ownership in Texas. He advocated raising the legal age to purchase a firearm from 18 to 21, the implementation of red flag laws that would allow law enforcement to take guns away from a person believed to be a danger, and for universal background checks. We should admit that there's nothing that we can come up with that would prevent every instance of gun violence, but we should also acknowledge that that should not stop us from doing what we can to defend the Second Amendment and protect more lives of those in our lives, he said. The remaining elephant in the room, the border, was addressed at the end of O'Rourke's speech, in which he spoke of the need to create a viable legal path for migrants coming into the U.S. In a subsequent interview with the Big Bend Sentinel, when asked what would become of the Operation Lone Star program, Governor Abbott's initiative to send resources and troops to border counties, O'Rourke said he would halt the state's operations he characterized as stunts. I would focus on the solutions that we're all looking for instead of the stunts, the publicity, the extremism that has been the hallmark of Greg Abbott's approach to the border, he said. As governor, there will be no more busing of migrants indiscriminately to Chicago, New York, and Washington, D.C., spending all this money to build a few miles of border wall, or involuntarily activating 10,000 members of the Guard, he said. None of these things have made us any safer or improved conditions at the border or addressed the root causes of the challenges that we face right now. What I will focus on as governor is a safe, legal, orderly path for people who want to come here to work, come here to join family, or come here to seek asylum, he continued. That means making the process of seeking asylum easier. If you're seeking asylum, today you're waiting 6 years for the adjudication of your claim, he said. How about 6 weeks? When asked by the Sentinel to weigh in on a matter of local concern, the stagnating construction on the Presidio International Bridge, O'Rourke said he was willing to expedite that process. The fact that we've been waiting so long for the Presidio Ojinaga, the rail line, the economic trade, and even just the ability to move people, opportunities that that presents, is an indictment on this state, he said. He further advocated devoting some of the $8 billion of TxDOT's excess budget to infrastructure in Presidio County and Brewster County. Lockhart said her chapter has received more assistance from the Texas Democratic Party this election cycle in their quest to win over rural voters. The party has supplied them with a database of voters so they know who to contact, who they can most likely sway to vote blue this November, that is, plus tips on talking points and yard signs. Over the next month, her group will be making phone calls and going door to door to get out the vote. They will also work to help elderly residents vote by mail. But part of Lockhart's ideal strategy has already come to fruition. I said, listen, I'll get down on my knees and beg Beto to come to the Big Bend area, because I knew what would happen if he did, she said. So many people were just asking for him to come, and I was about to do that. Then I got this email from his campaign saying Beto's coming to Alpine in September. I didn't even have to get down and beg. Because that's exactly what we needed, she said. Someone to come down to this area and say that he cares about us. Staff photo by Allegra Hobbs. Democratic gubernatorial candidate Beto O'Rourke addressed a crowd of over 600 at a campaign stop in Alpine.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan's News for Thursday, September 1st. Woman found dead in suspected murder-suicide. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A woman who was found dead in the apartments on North Carroll Street 2 weeks ago was allegedly shot to death by her boyfriend. According to Lieutenant Jeremy Kynes of the Monahans Police Criminal Investigation Unit, Police were called to the 1300 block of North Carroll Street on Saturday, August 20th, to conduct a welfare check on a 37-year-old female. Quote, upon arrival, officers spoke to witnesses, friends, and family on scene who said they had been unable to make contact with the victim, he said. Officers were unable to enter the apartment, and the landlord was called to open the door. Once inside, officers located the victim, later identified as Ashley Williams of Kermit, dead in the back bedroom from a single gunshot wound to the head. Williams was pronounced dead at the scene, and her body was taken to Lubbock for an autopsy. According to the medical examiner, it is suspected Williams was shot sometime on Thursday, August 18th. The welfare check call stemmed from co-workers of the alleged shooting suspect, 47-year-old Raymond Rigsby of Lufkin, after hearing from friends of Rigsby that he told them he was going to kill himself. Quote, Williams and Rigsby were allegedly in a relationship and supposed to have gone on a trip that weekend, but after co-workers heard Rigsby say he was going to kill himself, they became concerned for Williams' safety when they could not reach her, Kine said. Rigsby was found shot with a single inflicted gunshot wound at his home in Lufkin on Friday, August 19th, and was placed on life support. It was unclear as of press time whether or not he has succumbed to his injuries. The case is still under investigation. School upholds original fencing plan, agrees to foot the bill. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. R.J. Lopez, associate architect and accredited learning environment planner, gave a bond projects update at Monday evening's Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD board meeting. The question was raised about resolving the retention pond fence issue on the playground side of the pond. Superintendent of Schools Chad Smith told Lopez School Board President Raymond Reyes wanted an explanation on the whole fence thing around the retention pond. During the last meeting of the Monahans Economic Development Board, members were told the school wanted them to foot the bill for the remainder of the detention pond fence. MEDC Director Ashley Adalto told board members the plans initially received from the school showed a 6-foot fence already in place on the north side of the retention pond. Therefore, Maverick Engineering created plans hooking up to the existing fence. They were then told the school never had any intention of putting a fence. Adding the small section of fencing would add an additional $6,000 to the original bid. Lopez explained to the board, quote, it was my understanding in 2020, our set of plans and Maverick Engineering's plans, MEDC's engineering firm, both showed a chain-link fence on the school side of the pond. Both drawings showed a completely enclosed retention pond for approximately a year and a half, which was later interpreted as a back-to-back fence on the school side. Each architect firm made the decision to remove the fence on their own set of plans because a double back-to-back fence was not needed. With the removal of the fence from each set of the plans, there was no longer a fence showing to be built, and each company believed the other was going to be responsible for the fence. From the word go, we always planned to have a fence around the playground, Smith said. The board agreed to pick up the approximate $10,000 cost of erecting a chain-link fence on the playground side of the retention pond. In other business, in the superintendent's report to the board, was the Texas Education Association tax rate adoption process. Quote, schools in what used to be called Robin Hood school districts were allowed to send their excess revenue to a poorer district we used to help Presidio, Smith said. MWP ISD is considered a richer school district, therefore the money is sent to the state to be divided up at the state's discretion. Quote, 36% of MWP ISD budget goes back to recapture, Smith said. On the agenda also for approval was the ordinance to set tax rates for 2022. The tax rate of $1.01 per $100 valuation was approved by the board. This will raise the tax rate on a $100,000 home $199. A no-action item was a report on the enrollment for the 2022-2023 school year. The district is up 29 students compared to the first day of 2021. Monahans High School last day of school 2021 enrollment was 585. First day of school this year was 592. Enrollment on the seventh day, August 25th, was 625. Total enrollment for the district for the last day of 2021 was 2,122. The first day of this year was at 2,069, and pickup on the seventh day was 2,157. Board of Trustees members present for the Monday, August 29th meeting were Board President Raymond Reyes, Nancy Epchurch, Bobby Almanza, Donna Garcia, Josh Schwarb, Steve Fine, and Smith. Steve Tuxhorn was absent. The next regularly scheduled Board of Trustee meeting will be held on September 19th at 6:30 p.m. in the MWP ISD Administration Building Boardroom at 606 South Betty Street. Unvaxxed loose dogs lead to arrest. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man found himself behind bars last week after failing to appear in municipal court regarding notices he received about his dogs. Fabian Johnny Salgado, age 40, of 512 West 4th Street, was picked up by Monahans Police Department on six municipal court warrants issued by Municipal Court Judge Lori Asbury on charges of not having vaccination tags on his dogs and allowing the animals to roam at large. Quote, "These were old citations he received in April and March of 2021, but never appeared in court to take care of them," Asbury said. According to city ordinance, all dogs and cats in the city over 4 months of age must be vaccinated annually for rabies with a vaccine approved by the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Veterinary Biologic Division, and every animal owner is required to provide their animal with a collar for the tag, which is to be constantly worn. It is unlawful for an owner to permit a dog to run at large within the city. According to the law, a dog is at large if it is not within an enclosure adequate to contain the dog upon or within property owned or leased by its owner, or restrained by a leash or harness personally held by the owner of the dog. Quote, "We try to give dog owners a chance to get into compliance before taking things to these measures, but when owners let the dogs become a nuisance and we're getting calls every day, such as with this owner, then something has to be done," Chief of Police Christopher Quintana said. Quote, "Salgado's citation fines were $150 each, but once they became warrants, the fees increased to $260 each," Asbury said. Salgado pleaded guilty to all charges, and he was issued a bond of $520 for each charge. He was given time served on the two warrants for no vaccination tags and was given more time to pay on the four other charges. Local gets featured in magazine. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. Local writer Mitzi Johnson's poem, Texas Pecos Trail, has been published by Authentic Texas magazine. It was also picked up for publication by the Permian Proud online newsletter. Johnson has called Monahans home since 1973, when her husband Max became a coach at Monahans High School. Quote, "Max and Jerry Larned grew up together in Haskell, and Larned asked Max to be part of his coaching staff while I was a teacher at Edwards Elementary, Johnson said. Johnson started writing poems and songs while in high school and has continued her writing for herself and sometimes for friends who ask for a special occasion. Authentic Texas is the Heritage Magazine of Texas. Authentic Texas is a quarterly magazine that promotes Texas people, places, events, and stories. The published poem is as follows. The Texas Pecos Trails by Mitzi Johnson. The Texas Pecos Trail Drive is surely a great sight to see, covering hundreds and hundreds of miles, a uniqueness in history. Tabletop mesas will rise up from wide open prairies below. Springs will arise from under the ground, giving water that flows and flows. In the coolness of every morning, you start your day with a smile, as you travel along the great highways, seeing new sights mile after mile. Your day will soon turn to nighttime, and the stars will cover the sky. As you drive that long, lonely highway, the stars you can touch if you try. As you travel this West Texas roadway, here are some sights you will see. Museums in each and every town, sharing multitudes of history. The wild winds will move all the sand dunes, making new shapes every day. When you climb to the top of the tallest, you can feel the sun's warming rays. You can go to some of the state parks that have many fun things to do. You can travel deep into caverns and see stalactites and stalagmites too. You can visit forts that tell of our past, where buffalo soldiers stood guard, protecting our settlers as they passed through, heading to a life new and hard. There's also a place where many bats live, way down deep they abound. At dusk, you can watch and see them emerge from their home underground. As you walk in the footsteps before us, many places you'll visit and see, taking you back to long-ago times, showing how life used to be. These are some wonderful places you'll see on the great trail you'll ride, traveling the highways of Texas and the big open lands far and wide. Sagebrush is blooming as Monahans get drenched. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. The Texas sagebrushes are in full bloom around the area, with branches weighted down with purple flowers. What does this mean? Most older residents have heard the statements about the blooming sage showing that rain is on the way. The barometer bush, also known as Texas sage, is extremely sensitive to barometric changes in the atmosphere. It begins to bloom when conditions are merely optimal, falling atmospheric pressure for rain because of its ability to sense and detect high humidity in the atmosphere. The plants tend to bloom a few days before precipitation begins, but it really blooms when conditions are optimal for rain. A few days ago, the sage began loading up with blooms, and drought-stricken Monahans has received much-needed rain over the weekend and into the first part of the week. Sunday evening's storm dropped impressive amounts of rain on the parched ground. Rain measurements from Sunday's storm were reported as 1/2 inch south of Grand Falls, 1/2 inch in the southern section of Monahans, to 7/10 on the north side, according to local residents. On Monday morning, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration forecaster Scott Klebauer said, quote, Sunday evening storms downed a few high lines and did some damage to roofs. Monday morning reported rain amounts for the Sunday storms were Odessa 1.5 inches, Midland International Spaceport received 0.7 inches, Borden County reported 2 inches in areas. Across the Permian Basin, reports of 0.25 to 1.5 inches were recorded. Quote, a weak cold front was the cause of the Sunday rainfall, and a disturbance coming up from the southeast will set up conditions for more rain through Wednesday, said Klebauer. Monday night's rain reports from NOAA were Midland-Odessa receiving 1/4 inch to 3/4 inch, Reagan and Upton counties reported 1/2 inch to 1 inch, McKinney had almost 2 inches. The front brought flash flooding to the Guadalupe Mountains, as well as overnight low temperatures in the lower 50s. Tuesday night saw slower rain action in the Permian Basin area, with the exception of 1.5 inches reported south of Grand Falls. Quote, today, tonight, and into Thursday shows a 70 to 80% chance of rain for this part of Texas, NOAA forecaster Michelle Shunt said. Rain chances decrease toward the weekend with a 30 to 40% chance of rainfall and temperatures in the mid-80s. 80th Bomber Base Anniversary Set. A celebration in recognition of the 80th anniversary of the Pyote Rattlesnake Bomber Base is slated for Monday, September 5th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Million Barrel Museum Complex. Displays have been changed out, and 4 new displays have been placed at the museum complex for public viewing. Boy Scout Troop 675 will post the colors for the opening ceremony of the celebration. Also, as part of the day's activities, the Boy Scouts will show how they were instrumental in first aid care for soldiers in World War II and will give demonstrations of the type of first aid care they were able to provide. Goodie bags and a search and find trivia game will be available for children. Ward County Auditor and head of the Ward County Historical Commission, Ellen Fryer, will give a presentation on the history of the Army Airfield Base, which opened in 1942 and became the largest bomber training base in the United States. Admission is free, and the public is invited to come out and visit the museum in a show of appreciation for the West Texas Historical Air Base.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.